A Bethel couple dies in a weekend fire. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, December 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the state wants help from the federal government to help keep insurance health costs down.
It would be more attractive for more people to join and seek coverage and enroll in the individual market, which would help with the pool size.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
Bethel police say a local couple died in a weekend residential fire. Police say the bodies of 41-year-old Charity Alexi and 37-year-old Hans Alexi were found after firefighters put out the fire early Saturday morning. Alaska State Troopers say the two people were found in a bedroom of a trailer home. Police say there is no sign of foul play. According to authorities, the state fire marshal's office will be involved in the investigation of the fire. Police say the remains of the two people who died have been sent to the state medical examiner's office to determine their cause of death. A body found Friday near Palmer is believed to be that of the missing 16-year-old David Grunwald. Troopers have arrested another teen, 16-year-old Eric Almendinger, on charges of first-degree murder and kidnapping in connection with the case. Troopers say others involved in the incident have been identified but not yet charged. Grunwald was reported missing on November 13th and had been the subject of intense searches by law enforcement and volunteers. A day later, his Ford Bronco was found burned near Wasilla. According to court documents, Almendinger told Alaska State Troopers that two other people were also involved in Grunwald's murder. Almendinger alleges one of the others shot Grunwald in the head. A single 9mm shell was found near Grunwald's body. Troopers say Almendinger told investigators Grunwald had been beaten with the gun before he was shot. Almendinger said Grunwald had joined him and two others in a trailer behind Almendinger's house to drink and smoke marijuana the night of the murder. Remains believed to be that of Grunwald were found in the Kinnick River Road area and have been sent to the state medical examiner for final identification and to determine the cause of death. A vigil was held for Grunwald on Saturday in Palmer. Alaska's state government has gained national attention for what it's doing to keep its individual and family health insurance market from collapsing. Now the state is looking to the federal government to pay some of the cost of keeping down insurance price hikes. APRN and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
The State Division of Insurance plans to ask the feds to offset its cost for the Alaska Reinsurance Program. The program is defraying large increases in monthly premiums that insurers charge their customers in the individual market. For example, the state is paying $55 million next year to Premera to cover the cost of roughly 500 high-cost patients. Premera is the only company in Alaska offering individual insurance through the federal marketplace. Premera lowered its planned increase for next year from 42% to 7%. After the state legislature created the program. But the legislature put a 2-year time limit on the program, and lawmakers said the state doesn't have the money to fund it on an ongoing basis. So Division Director Lori Wing Heyer says it's important for the federal government to pay for reinsurance.
We'd really like to see this reinsurance program go forward into the future just because of what we're seeing that it did in 2017 to the rates.
So why would the federal government be interested in paying money for the program? There's a simple reason. The feds are projected to save more than $50 million per year. That's because the federal government will pay out less than projected in insurance subsidies to low to middle income individuals due to reinsurance lowering the premiums. Those subsidies are required under the Affordable Care Act, the federal law that President-elect Donald Trump has vowed to work with Congress to repeal. Wingheyer says Congress could fund Alaska's reinsurance program in its replacement for the ACA. One model for the replacement is to pool and subsidize the highest risk and most expensive customers. Before Obamacare, Alaska and other states had high-risk pools.
There has been a lot of talk amongst members of Congress that there should be high-risk pools again to get these high-cost individuals out of the individual market. We did that in this program.
Wingheyer also is hopeful that Tom Price, Trump's pick to be Secretary of Health and Human Services, will also be receptive to the state's application for federal funding. Alaska wants to receive all of the federal savings.
What his plan is also speaks to reinsurance and high-risk pools. So we're hopeful, even with the change in administration, that we'll get a favorable response.
Primera spokeswoman Melanie Kuhn says the company is monitoring what the federal government does. But she also says the reinsurance program could be attractive to the new administration as it plans for the future of the individual insurance market. She says that's particularly important in states like Alaska, which has a small pool of sick people in the individual market.
Having the stable source of funding definitely will work towards stabilizing in the market. And so what that means is it would be more attractive for more people to join and seek coverage and enroll in the individual market, which would help with the pool size.
Keeping insurance costs down is particularly important for the roughly 1 in 7 Alaskans who don't qualify for federal tax credits to buy individual insurance. That's according to Spencer Beagle, an insurance agent and owner of Alaskan Benefit Insurance Consultants in Anchorage.
Those people, of course, are the ones that suffer the most with having to pay the full cost of their health insurance premiums, and they're exorbitant.
Beagle notes one 55-year-old single female client of his will pay more than $1,200 a month next year. The public has a chance to comment on the Division of Insurance application to the federal government until December 23rd. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The community of Stebbins has been experiencing an ongoing water crisis since the community's waterline froze in late November. City Administrator Nora Tom says an alternative to using the frozen waterline is to use trucks with 2,000-gallon tanks to haul water from a lake about 5 miles outside of town. Currently, Stebbins' 2 water trucks are in need of repair, but Tom hopes they will be running by the end of the week. Stebbins' remaining water supply is limited, and Tom says if the situation continues without change, the community will be completely out of water by the end of December. A man shot Saturday by a Juneau police officer has been released from a Seattle hospital. Juneau police say 38-year-old Jeremy Tinney was treated at Harborview Medical Center, released yesterday, and arrested on a Washington State warrant. The charges include assault on a child, harassment, and a probation violation. Juneau police say Tinney, just before 1 a.m. on Saturday, was driving a sport utility vehicle that fled from an officer. More than 3 hours later, police found the SUV crashed. Responding officers told dispatchers the driver had barricaded himself inside and within 1 minute of arriving, reported an officer had shot the driver. At a weekend press conference, Chief Bryce Johnson said the driver wasn't armed. Police on Monday said Sergeant Chris Gifford, a 16-year department veteran, fired one shot. This is the first officer-involved shooting in the capital city in nearly 10 years. The investigation continues. There could be big changes ahead for Anchorage's taxi industry. During its meeting tomorrow, the Assembly is voting on a measure that aims to eliminate the fixed number of cabs operating in the city, which would happen in a phased approach over the next few years. South Anchorage Assemblymember Bill Evans introduced it.
What the ordinance does is basically kind of ends the sort of monopoly that the municipality has created around the number of taxi cabs that are allowed to operate in the city, and moves towards a more open market, more competitive type of arrangement.
If it passes, the measure would get rid of the secondary market for cab permits, which, according to documents submitted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, can cost more than $100,000. Currently, Anchorage has less than 200 taxi permits. Evans' measure would allow 20 more permits to come online every year for 5 years, transitioning toward a totally open market. At that point, taxis would be more like a regular business license, with an annual fee of just under $2,000 to hold the permit. Evans and other critics of Anchorage's cab industry say there are not enough cars to meet demand at times like bar break, and that far-flung parts of the municipality, like the Hillside and Eagle River, are underserved.
It's not deregulation of the taxi industry, because we're still going to have all the same safety regulations on drivers and on vehicles that currently exist. We're only changing the number of taxis that can be allowed to operate.
The measure will not bring in app-based cab services like Uber and Lyft, which are currently blocked from operating in Alaska under state laws. But there are pieces of the bill which open the door to such companies, and Evans is planning on introducing a subsequent measure that would give them the green light if state laws change. There will be a separate measure also up for a vote on whether to attach a $1 charge to cab fares when a customer pays with a credit card. Public testimony before the assembly starts tomorrow after 6 p.m. in the LUSAC Library. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, one of the country's first courses in Arctic Ocean navigation.
I mean, you can ask the people that ran the Titanic what the risks are associated with ice transits, and I think you have a pretty good understanding what that's all about.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their homes. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins leads to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message brought to you by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
As winter solstice approaches and daylight hours are short in Alaska, public safety, medical groups, and other Alaska businesses are calling attention to pedestrian safety. Marsha Howell is the executive director of the Alaska Injury Prevention Center. She says there are lots of things pedestrians can do to be safer while walking along Alaska's roadways, such as increased visibility with brightly colored clothing, reflective tape, and blinking lights.
Things like crossing at crosswalks, but not trusting drivers to necessarily stop for you. So just like for cyclists, we say make eye contact with a driver before you cross in an intersection if there's maybe somebody at a stoplight or a stop sign.
Howell says the responsibility for safety is shared by drivers as well, especially in light of a recent accident near Bean's Cafe, a homeless shelter in Anchorage that sent 4 people to the hospital.
There's new signs up all around town where some of the high-risk areas are for both cyclists and pedestrians, where there have been crashes in the recent past. And I know, paying attention to those signs, and really when you're in one of those areas, be on the lookout for people walking and maybe not always making the best choices.
Howell says in 2014, about 20% of traffic fatalities in Alaska involved pedestrians. To address the needs of its clients in Anchorage, Bean's Cafe is asking for donations of high-visibility gear, ranging from reflective tape and safety lights to safety vests and jackets. As temperatures rise, Arctic sea ice is retreating, making trips through the Northwest Passage from Alaska to Maine a new summer reality. But until now, mariners navigating Arctic ice have had limited formal training. A professor at Maine Maritime Academy is working to change that. He's developed one of the first courses for seafarers in polar regions. Zoe Sobel of Alaska's Energy Desk visited the school in rural Maine to watch a simulation exercise.
Your exercise has been started.
In a windowless room at Maine Maritime Academy, Glenn Burley is standing calmly at the controls of a massive tanker. He is stuck, encased in a sea of ice, waiting for an icebreaker to break him free. And when help arrives, the rescue doesn't go as planned.
I think this is one of the situations where things do go wrong. I seem to have lost my rudder.
Burley is one of nearly 1,000 students studying at Maine Maritime Academy. He hopes to one day captain a ship. Today is a preview of what that job might look like on the Arctic Ocean. The software is so detailed, you can hear the birds circling overhead. Just like a real ship, but without the danger.
I mean, you can ask the people that ran the Titanic what the risks are associated with ice transits, and I think you have a pretty good understanding what that's all about.
That's Ralph Punt. He designed this polar navigation course with help from a Department of Homeland Security grant. Before teaching, Punt served as a merchant marine captain and spent time working at both poles. His time sailing taught him how much he didn't know. That lack of knowledge was dangerous. He says practicing in the simulator is a chance for real-world experience. Kind of.
There's nothing like the real thing, you know. It's as close as you can get without being in the real thing. And the nice thing is sort of that stopgap between basic book learning and having the responsibility of a multi-billion dollar vessel. So if they make mistakes, let them make the mistakes here.
This class isn't the only way to learn Arctic navigation. Punt's working on a more advanced version, and AvTech, the technical college in Seward, has one too. These classes will get mariners up to speed for the Polar Code, which goes into effect in January. That international code requires additional training for mariners to protect ships, passengers, and crews operating in the harsh Arctic and Antarctic environments. Punt says the Arctic Ocean today is a dramatically different place than when he was there 30 years ago.
We could not go through most of the ice up there without an icebreaker escort at that time. I talked to my students who transit up there, and I said, well, how was the ice this year? I interview them every year. How was the ice? And they say to me, what ice? You know, it's that open now.
With less ice, Punt says there's a new set of risks, and mariners have to know what they're up against. That's what's great about practicing in the simulator. With the click of a mouse, almost any situation becomes reality.
From here, I can control weather. You know, I can make things really nasty very, very quickly here. Let's see what I can do. How about some blowing snow? That's Alaska weather, right?
And that's part of why Glenn Burley signed up for Punt's class. With Arctic ice decreasing, more ships will transit the Northwest Passage. That could mean a growing job market, which Burley has his eyes on.
When that industry does open up more, I can walk in and say, I am already certified for this, and you don't have to send me back to school for it. I'm ready to go right now. And I've had experience doing simulations with ice and whatnot. So that puts me ahead of a normal third mate who hasn't done anything at all with this.
Right now, the market is small, and it's unclear what the future holds for icebreakers. This summer, the cruise ship Crystal Serenity made a historic transit of the Northwest Passage with a personal icebreaker escort. Back on the bridge, success. Both ships have broken through the ice.
Your exercise has been suspended by the instructor.
Burley completed the course earlier this year and is one step closer to a future as an Arctic mariner. But his teacher, Ralph Punt, questions if those jobs should even exist.
I'm not a fan of all this happening in the Arctic or in the Antarctic. I think it needs to remain pristine. If we do have to go up into the Arctic, we need to understand and respect it for what it is.
With the class, Punt wants to cultivate a new crop of mariners, trained to navigate polar waters with minimal impact, even if he's hoping they don't have to go there at all. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Zoe Sobel in Castine, Maine.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future.
And by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. It's a fact. 85% of Alaska Native and American Indian people don't use illegal drugs. For more resources on building a healthy life, visit anthc.org/weare. This message sponsored by ANTHC, a nonprofit organization.
Commercial fishermen are largely at the whim of the seafood market. Prices can vary wildly while operation costs stay the same, that is, until now. As KCAW's Emily Russell reports, an energy audit aims to help Sitka's fishermen increase their profit margins.
It's a sunny morning in Sitka. Usually Steve Fish, yes, that's his real name, would be out on his boat, the Cariel, trolling for salmon or longlining for black cod or halibut. But today, the 66-foot fishing vessel and its captain are parked in the harbor. Fish has surrendered the Cariel to a swarm of engineers who can't help but ask how his gear works. Fish obliges.
The fish hits the crucifier and then the winch, as it's hauling the gear, pulls the hook out of the fish's mouth.
They're all aboard the Cariel today to conduct an energy audit of the vessel. Fish, along with 17 other fishermen in Sitka, volunteer to take part.
Yeah, it's dollars and cents.
And for Fish and most others in the industry, each year those dollars and cents are spent at the pump.
You know, we might use somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 gallons.
Do you know how much that costs you?
Well, between $20,000 and $50,000, depending on the price of diesel.
One obvious way to cut costs is with a more efficient engine, but Mike Gaffney says there are other less expensive avenues as well. He's an engineer based in Virginia and usually works on larger ships like cruise liners and Coast Guard cutters.
This is my first episode with fishing vessels, so that's why I keep asking how the operations work.
Gaffney was brought up to help with the Fishing Vessel Energy Efficiency Project. That's a joint effort by the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association and the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. Gaffney is collecting a baseline of data, how much energy, say, a vessel like the Cariel uses day to day. Gaffney climbs down the narrow ladder into the Cariel's engine room.
And of course, there's lots of room in here to move around.
He's joking. The space, it's tiny. Gaffney tucks himself up against the electric panel and runs wires between it and his power quality analyzer, or PQA, which resembles a clunky, oversized calculator.
It is the Hiyoki 3197 model. That one is sexy.
He starts with the vessel's lighting, recording amperage, voltage, and power factor.
So we're going to measure what he's currently drawing, and then we see how long he actually keeps them on. We'll figure out what his annual cost is for operating these lights to see if it's cost-effective to switch to LEDs.
Right now, the vessel uses high-pressure sodium lights, which Gaffney says have a long warm-up period. So fishermen tend to just turn them on and leave them on.
Also, every time you cycle them on and off, it shortens the life of the bulb.
That's not the case for LEDs. There's no warm-up time, and it doesn't hurt to turn them on and off. And they're brighter, Gaffney adds.
If you put a LED lighting in this engine room, it'll brighten it way up.
For fishermen, though, that's not always a good thing. Some complain about the light being too blue, too harsh on the eyes. Another problem unique to fishermen, especially in Alaska, LEDs don't heat up the way other bulbs do, which means more ice buildup on the outside lighting. It's the data, but also these insights that make the project unique.
I don't know of anybody who's doing this type of work on fishing boats.
Chandler Kemp is an engineer based in Sitka. He's compiling all of Gaffney's data and writing up reports for the 18 vessels that volunteered for the audit. Kemp says the end goal is an online tool for fishermen.
It will be a kind of an online interface that people can go on to easily access the information that we've collected and enter in a little bit of information about their boat, say the fisheries they participate in, the length, the engine size.
The tool, which Kemp expects will be released in 2017, will then generate ways to make the vessel more efficient. And for fishermen, that means more profitable. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Russell.
Galena voters go to the polls tomorrow in the community's first ever recall election. Galena School Board President Kim Kopp is the target of the recall. The recall effort does not point toward any specific instances of fraud or misuse of power, but instead sees Kopp's leadership style as an obstacle to a larger series of reforms. From KIYU in Galena, Tim Bodoni reports.
The sponsors of the recall charge Kim Kopp with incompetence, and as evidence, a 200-word recall statement alleges, among other things, that Kopp is not receptive to other opinions about school district operations, that she misuses the chain of command to avoid responsibility for solving problems, and that her involvement with groups affiliated with the Galena Bible Church presents a conflict of interest. Former school board member Jenny Bryant is the primary sponsor of the recall effort. She started building a case against Kopp's continued leadership shortly after resigning from the Galena City School District Board of Education over the summer and assembled 11 other initial sponsors for the effort, followed by 31 signatures of local voters on the recall petition. Bryant claims that under Kopp's leadership over the past 3 years, too many resources have been siphoned away from Galena's elementary and junior high and redirected to the district's larger components, a 225-student boarding school on the former Galena Air Force Base, and the state's largest correspondence school, Interior Distance Education of Alaska. Bryant argues that the district's leadership is too insular and dismissive of community input, and after 3 years of failed attempts on the board to steer the district in a new direction, Bryant thinks that removing the school board president through a recall is the best way to open up the district's governing process.
If the community doesn't have a say, isn't part of the decision-making process, then that district is ineffective in representing the community and making sure that everybody is part of the system, that it's our school. We're ready for a change, a big change.
Kopp denies any wrongdoing and labels the allegations leveled against her as vague and short on the particularity required for recall under city law. She says that if Bryant and her fellow recall sponsors want to force a vote about school district operations in general, then it shouldn't just be her name on the recall ballot.
If that was truly the perspective, then it seems like all the current school board members would have been on the recall petition. In my studies of recalls throughout the state in the last 25 years or so, that has been the general way of doing things, is that a board majority voted a certain way, and so the whole board was being recalled.
Kopp admits that she's taken some of the criticism about her communication style to heart, but that overall the district has become more inclusive of public opinion under her leadership than it had been in the past. And if decisions don't always seem to benefit Galena's local student population, Kopp says that's unavoidable in an unusual school district like Galena's.
We have 4,300 students in our school district that we are responsible for. We're only elected by the parents of about 100, but we have 4,200 extra students whose parents don't vote for us that we are responsible to listen to their concerns and meet their needs as well.
The recall election will be conducted and supervised by the city of Galena, and many critics of the recall effort wanted the local government to derail it due to the lack of specific evidence that would demonstrate incompetence. But Bryant, for one, is glad that it wasn't too hard to put her concerns to a community-wide vote.
I have seen firsthand how rules and policies and procedures can just kill ideas and kill open discussion and open debate. And this was pretty easy to do, and it happened, and it's cool. It's going to a vote, and the people get to decide.
In Galena, this is Tim Bodoni.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Ellen Lockyer, Josh Edge, and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Davis Hovey in Nome, Tim Bodoni in Galena, Emily Russell in Sitka, and Zoe Sobel in Castine, Maine. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Sean Dugan is our editor and producer. Our web editor is Wesley Early. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. If you have an opinionated teenager in your home who thrives on proving a point, check out the Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future Scholarship Competition organized by UAA's Seawolf Debate Program. More than $10,000 in prizes will be awarded. Debating Alaska's Fiscal Future gives the next generation of Alaskans a voice in the direction of our state. Contest details available at debatingakfuture.com. This message sponsored by Seawolf Debate.
APRN brings news about Alaska to public radio every day. APRN, we cover the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.